listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you. Thank you.
rip and rape a little bit more each day out of a rapidly shrinking pool of exploitable resources. Does that sound about right? Yeah. And everybody, Republican or Democrat, has to deal with that reality. You know, we can crank up the international and put on our little bandera rosa, but it is what it is. Global communism never quite caught on, but by God, global capitalism did, and the ultimate impact is the same: less freedom, not more, and ultimately authoritarian structures. So, there. Yeah. Let's test the phone system. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Oh, golly, I hope we're not going to have problems with the phone system. Well, that may have been you hanging up, or it may have been a problem with our own system here. We shall find out in short order. That is not inspiring. I think I went over this at some length. Maybe you weren't listening, Jim. But the magic underwear is our temple vestments, temple garments that are required to be worn immediately next to the skin once you become a 33rd degree noble exalted Mormon, or whatever they call them, under prophet or whatever. Men and women, you got to wear the magic, and they're the ones who call it the magic underwear. That's not something I came up with. Mormons refer to their magic underwear. They have a mythology that's built around it whereby magic underwear has been said to stop bullets. Not that it does. That's like saying the Virgin Mary appears on, you know, a Kaiser roll. But that's the magic underwear, and you have to wear it. You can't get around it. If you're faithful, don't be caught dead without your don't be caught dead in no little, you know, Michael Jordan Haynes brief or nothing. No sir, not if you're a 33rd exalted Mormon who's going to have his own planet when he dies, and it's going to be people, and he's going to have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of wives, and just hop from bed to bed to bed to bed to bed. And really, because that's what the theology teaches, you're going to be a god on your own planet. I'm not kidding. But you know what? You can't have it if you die without your magic underwear on. So, there we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Friday on the front porch.
And hallelujah, the phones work. Okay, thank you. Hey, David.
Yeah, hey. One quick thing. I think people need to What's that email they have to contact?
Oh, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com.
And that would be for, I think, fundraising.
And, yes, it does apply. If you want to make sure that no transfer costs are attached to your PayPal contribution, you go to PayPal, you use that address to send money, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and then pick personal and gift, and boom. No.
So spontaneous. So one more time, they go to bobkincaid@gmail.com.
That's right, David. They do. They go to bobkincaid@gmail.com.
Okay, that's good. I just gotta have to make that clear for a lot of people who.
And the snail mail address is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So everyone pretty much has that clear. And if you don't, you just tuned in. It's bobkincaid@gmail.com. And if you just tuned in just now, you need to listen to the podcast because we're not going to do this all night.
No, I mean, this has its limits, David.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
it ain't Labor Day, and this ain't no telethon, and I ain't going to cry.
Right. Before I get into a little bit of the politics thing, I do want to pay my respects to one of the great music producers of our time. His passing is celebrated because he died in 2006 of lupus. The magnificent, amazing J.D. coming out of Detroit, J. Dilla, from the crew Slum Village. He was also in a Tribe Called Quest's production crew. An amazing producer, an amazing musician, considered the god of the NPC. And I learned an interesting fact that really does show you the spirit of this man. Was on his last album called Donuts. This is going to freak everyone out listening to this. He actually literally could not speak and could not talk, and he left messages in his samples of his music. So the samples that he chose, and he was making this at his bedside, people, with his little sampler in his last days on earth and his last moments, and he left messages for all his family and friends, even his mother. All the samples. So whatever he wanted to say, he said it through the sampler.
Wow.
Yeah, so rest in peace, J. Dilla. Also inspired people like D'Angelo, Questlove, Q-Tip. Busta Rhymes has made a pledge to his family that he's going to include one track, a track on it, on every single album that he releases. So there, that's some kind of loyalty for you to... A great innovator and a master of samples. What he could do was just amazing. He actually literally, without the help of Pro Tools and anything like that, he could memorize where samples were on records and make the sample beats on the fly with just a little... And that comes from his ability to make pause mixtapes using the pause button production. And it really, if you really want to check out the world of J. Dilla, they just put a great documentary on BBC One Extra, and I urge everyone to check it because it's really inspiring if you come from a similar background that J.D. comes from, or even if you don't, just to catch out and see how much he inspired to the world of hip-hop and of music in general. So many people were inspired by this guy, even though he didn't have the notoriety in the music industry as a celebrity producer or anything like that. But he was quite amazing, and they're also celebrating his legacy in Detroit right now. So that's just something to remember. J. Dilla, J.D., James Yancey, remember him. If you haven't checked out his music...
Worth a listen.
Worth a listen, and definitely.
Well, speaking of music related items, yeah. Our my head writer David in Tennessee, one of your brothers in the fraternity of Davidness, has the night off. He and his son are heading down into Nash Vegas because the patron saint band of the Horn is playing tonight.
Oh my God, that's great!
Yeah, wouldn't you love to see the Drive-By Truckers in Nashville? Yeah.
That would be great to see that. I did want to mention something regarding what Andy was saying about the I noticed this more and more about how, and I really think that if someone made this and someone created this, it would really put a lot of people would start to see a lot of things more clearer and focused. I've thought about this. If someone were to make a political game based on your political reality, your dream president, you're just a complete simulation, and you were to experience what anyone is to experience going in that White House or what have you, you would have so many similar incidents that you have with any president that you choose. We can't keep talking about this fantasy, people. There is no fantasy president. There is no fantasy decision. Everything is going to have consequences. I don't like... Here's some real brutal truth for you. I don't like a lot of stuff that Obama does, but here's the point that I'd like to hit home. But I understand that with every choice that he makes, he's going to have blowback. He's going to have drawbacks.
And you cannot be president of the United States, David, without doing business with the 1%.
Right.
And the idea that there's something new in that is a bit naive. Because the people, you know, the first president of the United States was George Washington. Like, I need to tell anybody that. Well, he was a 1%er. So was John Adams. So was Thomas Jefferson. Now, Jefferson remained persistently and perpetually in debt, but he was still a 1%er. If you follow the PRISM West Virginia American History Series, you'll find that this nation, for the most part, has always run for the benefit of the 1%. It is the fact that we have finally become aware of it and wise to it that's created the popular movement. But you know, to bring it to light. But pending the change that will be required, which probably is a wholesale rewrite of the Constitution, you're going to have two-party politics, and it's just going to be that. And eventually, if one party fades away, the third party will rise up to replace it, or it will transition itself. What you're seeing, for instance, right now, may be argued that it is the fade-out of what is left of progressivism and liberalism in this country. You know, as a progressive and a liberal, I grieve at that. I hope it's not true. You know, you see things like Wisconsin and the pushback in Ohio, and you think, you know, we've still got a chance. But there's no guarantee. So...
Yeah, I understand you. I understand completely. And I would say that the only thing I can say to people who are saying, but what about this, what about this, what about this? You know, the only thing I can say to you is painstaking incrementalism. So many people around the world, listen to me now, so many people around the world, people, would die for the place we're in right now, would die for that moment. Even as flawed as all of our politicians and leaders are, I can trade you a horror beyond horrors that you would never want to go. So that's the choices we have, what we have right now. Do I like it? No. But I'm one person, and you're one person, and everything that you think that is in your mind is could be a reality, that's fantasy. Do you understand that? That's fantasy. You have to deal with the concrete collective reality that we are dealing with all right now. You cannot deal with the reality in your head. You can do that in an artist rendering of a portrait, music, books, whatever you're into. Whatever you're into, sports, you can have that dream moment for yourself. But for us as a nation, it's not going to happen. We have to deal with what's here.
It is, and that's kind of reality, right?
Right. It's reality. And Bob, you know, the thing about it is, though, is that I would like to hear somebody And if you and if anyone's getting angry or getting emotional or anything, give me your dream cabinet. Give me your dream presidency. Give me everything that you want on that platter. And guess what will happen? Everything that you wished for is going to be dismantled, just like it is with Barack Obama, just the way it is with any politician. Because you have to deal with the reality that you that's left together. Whatever you, whatever happens, the choices that you make, you're going to have those consequences. And that's what you have to deal with then. And that's a hard thing to admit for a lot of people. I hear a lot of progressives stumble over this. They say, no, if we just had this president. No, if we just had this senator. No, if we just had this congressman. No.
Well, no, look, I mean, okay, backing up just a hair.
Yeah.
The real fight, the biggest fight, is the Senate this year. I'm
right.
Again, coming from that position of realism, the House is not going to change hands.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate may and become full-on fascist Republican. Okay? Jim Webb in Virginia was a right-wing enough Democrat, and look who's running for that seat. You've got Tim Kaine, a Democrat, who was such a profound chairman of the Democratic National Committee that he actually contributed to the ass beating that we took that the Democratic Party took in 2010. Yeah, I'm still a registered Democrat.
Right.
Or you can have George Makaka Allen. Fun.
Yeah, that's some choice right there. I mean, the other thing I don't like is when people say, there's no choice between the two. No, there is a definite choice.
Oh, there will be. Depending on who it is, there will be shades of difference. Look at Wisconsin. I was just talking to our good buddy Bruce up there the other day, and he was talking about the candidate they have running for governor there. He referred to her as a sort of a Midwestern Elizabeth Warren type. And she'll be running against Snot Walker. Now, am I going to get the same Democrats are as bad as Republicans argument there? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean.
But the thing is, if you want that progressive, that really progressive president, you know, the one who draws lines in sand and tells Republicans to knock chips off his shoulder and stuff, you got to get him into the office. Now, I, for one, didn't think that Barack Obama was never a progressive. He was what we projected upon him.
Mm-hmm.
Even the health care plan that he was talking about when he was running for office was less liberal than so-called Hillary care. Yeah, I remember little inconvenient things like that. The Rahm Emanuel, whose father said to some friend of theirs who was complaining about Barack Obama not being friendly enough to Israel, Rahm Emanuel's father said, "Listen, it's not like he's some Arab washing the floors," talking about his son Rahm.
Right.
You know, it's disgusting. Geithner, no thank you. Larry Summers, there's plenty to. One of his National Security Council guys is a guy who was actively involved in blowing up mountains because he sat on, Jesus, what board was it? Was it the Massey board, maybe? I don't remember. Sure, there's lots to gripe about here. But beyond the griping, what do you do? And the what do you do part is there has to be public financing of political campaigns. There has to be a wholesale revamp of voting in this country that gets rid of all the electronic video game voting, whether it be touchscreen or optical scan. We have to go back to pens and papers and X's in boxes that are counted by people one at a time. You have to get rid of Citizens United.
Mm.
And if you want that parliamentary proportional representation thing, you've got to have a constitutional convention. And that's the one that really gives me the turtle squirts, David. Because, wow, I just, you know, I don't know, where would you hold it? Philly? New York? Madison Square Garden, maybe?
Jeb Bush's backyard?
And, well, yeah. And the corporate sponsorships and the power that the right wing has relative to progressives and liberals, can you imagine the money that would pour into that? You don't want what would come out of a constitutional convention in the 21st century in the United States of America. There's a constitution kerfuffle going on right now, as a matter of fact, David. I don't know if you've heard about this or not, but it's a dandy. Right-wingers are having a show-nuff plum hissy over what? Well, some remarks by... Oh, Jesus, no kidding. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Justice Ginsburg gave a speech to a small group of Egyptian people. You know, last night we had the clip of Justice Sotomayor appearing on Sesame Street. Well, Justice Ginsburg spoke to a group of Egyptians. And she told that Egyptian audience that she would recommend against using the United States Constitution as the model for a new Egyptian Constitution.
Hmm.
Now, the right wing has gone into full-on, no kidding, absolute hissy mode, okay? They're calling for her to be impeached and resigned and maybe drawed and quartered. Okay? Why? Because she didn't say that the U.S. Constitution was handed down from the hand of God to James Madison from Sinai. Liberty Counsel said, Justice Ginsburg has insulted the Constitution. At the Daily Caller, it was, she's dissing the Constitution while abroad. I didn't know it was nice to call women broads anymore. Oh, they mean overseas. Well, listen. Yeah, that's how I'd expect the same thing of the right wing. Let's see. Breitbart, she has disdain for the Constitution. Red State, she has a perverted judicial philosophy. Let's see. American Spectator, Justice Ginsburg should resign. All because she said, and this is the essence of it, she said, look, the Constitution was put together in 1787. Maybe that's 200 years of human experience that you might want to consider in framing it up. Now, that's not crazy, is it?
Nope.
But the right wing's having a hissy because that shows she's un-American. Please. But oddly enough, as Think Progress points out, Antonin Scalia recently said, the Bill of Rights of the former evil empire, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, was much better than ours. But no outrage. Sorry.
You see, the whole thing with this is another constant reminder of the fact why so many people are going to choose corporate DLC over right-wing evangelical crazies. I know that's going to make a lot of people angry, but that's the choice. The Democrats that we have in office right now, it's going to take forever and a day for them to change into what we'd like to what we'd like for them to be representative of us.
And that's not to say, you know, that's not to say that people should give up and go home, David. That's not my point.
No.
My point is that any fight that you get into, you've got to get into it, A, with a goal, and B, with it's like a roadmap. You know, if
right.
I'm sitting here in West Virginia and I want to drive to see you in Maine, it's not going to do me any good to start mapping my journey from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. You got to know where you are and where you want to get to. Well, we know where we'd like to get to, but as long as we don't acknowledge where we are, i.e. empire, we're going to have a hard time getting started. And, you know, the stuff that was being talked about on the program last night, drones flying over? Really? Surveillance cams with face recognition technology in New York City? I mean, New Yorkers must not know about it, because it would be all those surveillance cams would just be people holding up their middle finger going, yeah, this, you know, take a picture of this. Right? Because it's New York.
Mm-hmm.
Or New Yorkers just, you know, can't be bothered, and, you know, that's beneath their contempt. New Yorkers are cool, either way you slice it. Yeah, photograph this. That's America. This is an America where there's a guy sitting in Congress who, as we discussed the other night, one of his formative images of his childhood was watching some sleaze merchant literally flout the rationing rules of the Second World War that were designed to keep our troops from starving in the field. And now that's held up as how did he describe it? The free market solving government mischief. I can't get that one out of my head, David. That's libertarianism.
And
this means something to me, because I'm connected to my history and my family. If every butcher in America had done what that sleazy butcher in Pittsburgh did, all the meat you want for a price on Saturdays, if every butcher in America had done that, what would my father have eaten in the belly of that aircraft carrier? What would my two uncles who didn't come home, what would they have eaten before they were killed?
Not prime rib, that's for sure.
Well, not not sea rations either.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, open up the damn little can and see a note from cranky ass Ron Paul saying, the free market has solved government mischief. You know, F you, Ron Paul. It astonished, I mean, that the Second World War, and we could have the political discussion on it if necessary, but the Second World War was the last time that the United States actually acted as close as is humanly possible for a nation of this size as one, and understood the concept of a shared sacrifice and a shared goal, shared desires, and shared success. After we won the war, it was game on. You know, the full-on capitalism ramped right back up. But that story just astonishes me. I can't believe that. I don't know, maybe not many people read that story.
I think what...
But we, you know, we went from 1940s Ron Paul ism, and that stuff, you know, there's a reality to it. That stuff got traction, because if you remember during George Bush's war on the people of Iraq, Halliburton was being paid $29 per soldier per day to feed our personnel there, and were busted serving rotten meat. So yeah, there are little lines that get drawn between things like Ron Paul thinking it's okay to screw American servicemen for that butcher to do that, and lo and behold, soldiers in 2003, 2004 being served rotten meat in Iraq. Right?
I mean, right. And you know, this just goes to show yet another reason why we have to have a lot of these Democratic moderates in a lot of different districts that we don't want them, because the problem is we don't have the chance, the probability that we're going to replace them all with progressives in the next, say, 2 years.
Well, and that's, you know, look, the House is going to be Republican. I mean, I'm not trying to pee on anybody's Wheaties or anything, but is there any scenario whereby anybody thinks that, you know, short of a bunch of right wingers being raptured or called home to Jesus or whatever, that Democrats have a chance? Because there's not a Democrat that has a chance anywhere in the so-called Solid South.
Mm.
because they want their conservative family values, and they haven't been hurt enough to recognize the nature of those who are doing the harm. So the South's out. We're not going to get any seats there. We're going to be down one seat in Ohio that's either going to be Marcy Kaptur or Dennis Kucinich, and I hope it's Ms. Kaptur. I mean, she's done some good, but I really don't want a Congress that doesn't even have the one lone voice crying in the wilderness that is Dennis Kucinich. You know, where are, I mean, they're adding congressional seats in the South. They're adding congressional seats in Texas. Guess what kind of seats those are going to be? Hint, not progressives.
Definitely not progressive. And, you know, this was just another reminder. I was reading the, there's a great article on that Ari Berman did on redistricting in the South, pretty well in depth and in detail. And basically what it points to, people, is the fact that, yeah, you better hold on to a lot of these DLC memberships across America, because that's what you're going to have to get used to for however much time it takes for to have a solid progressive base of seats that we can replace these DLCers with. But until then, you know what? What can I say? You better start learning how to play golf with them or something.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah, I know. You can't.
Because, you know, I haven't played in years, but I used to love to play golf. And
yeah.
But the thing is, whenever you play with a right-winger, you know what you find out? Those little bastards cheat. They kick their ball. Winter rules. Improve your lie, Judge Schmales. I'll take a free drop here. Oh, is that my third mulligan? You know, little bastards cheat. So, yeah.
I mean, that's what... Bob, that's the problem. That's what we're left with. And people say, well, so you're going to choose the lesser of two evils? I don't think like that. Here's how I think like that. We have generations and generations of children that are about to be born that are depending on us to make the right decision. And if that requires us to suffer a bit to get this painstaking incrementalism, what I told you about, then so be it. That's the choice we have to make as a nation.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'll get email over the weekend.
You know, I know.
Andy said, he said, I do value your opinions. I started quite a controversy. No, it's not a controversy.
It's a discussion.
I would love to live in a country with proportional representation.
Right.
Because then I could go and join up with some party that shared my values. Because, you know, let's get something straight. The Democratic Party in West Virginia does not share my values. The Democratic Party in West Virginia shares the values of the coal industry. God Almighty, I'm the last guy that needs to be told about being sold out. You know, you can't talk to Democrat or Republican about ending mountaintop removal in this state. Well, what are we going to do about the jobs?
You know, Bob, when it really all comes down to this, and this is what a lot of liberals and progressives don't want to admit, but it's true. Eventually, you and me and everyone collectively are going to have to work with these evil bastards, or these light bastards, or these moderate bastards, or these diet bastards. But we're going to have to work. Otherwise, we're going to sink. What's your choice, America?
I hate the watery sort of pathetic legislation that comes out of working with those evil fuckers. Oh, sorry. We have examples of that. Let's go back in history for a little bit. In the 1970s, there was a full-on move to outright outlaw strip mining. This is before mountaintop removal ever got much of a hold. Mm-hmm. It was during the Carter administration, and that movement had huge, huge followings and considerable success. But instead of crafting a bill that said, thou shalt not no more, as Ken Heckler wanted back then, and what a man he is, up in his 90s and still fighting, instead of doing that, we got the Surface Mine Control and Surface Mine Reclamation and Control Act, SMACRA, Control and Reclamation Act, that basically enshrined strip mining in law instead. And Jimmy Carter signed it saying, oh, I hate this. I mean, he really did. He said he didn't like it. And now, in 2012, as a result of that kind of compromising, guess what? We've got babies being deformed in the womb. We've got people dying of heart disease and endocrine disorders and pulmonary diseases and cancers because of political compromise. I understand the problem, but I also understand the political realities. And it's a damned slippery, hateful, the ground glass strewn slope. And everybody gets cut up on it.
And that's why so many people, they just flip over the board table. Because they get so frustrated. And that's the whole point of it, is to create this amount of gridlock and this amount of frustration that reaches epic proportions.
And we know that, for instance, Andy lives in a district, as I understand it, where there are three Democrats vying in a primary who will ultimately be the member of Congress, okay? Andy's working for one. Two others are running. One is more corporate than another. One is more progressive than the other two. But you know what? And I just want to say this. I'll take your leavings, Andy. Because I won't have, in my primary, I will not have a progressive choice on anything except for my county commission. It's going to be the same old tired pro-coal corporate Democrats that are on there every time. And I reiterate, you know, for those who think that I'm being an apologist for Mr. Obama, assuming that his name is on the primary ballot in West Virginia, I'm leaving it blank. I would leave it blank in any state where I lived. Because a primary is an expression of the will of the party. And to the extent that I'm a member of the Democratic Party, my will is to let the President of the United States know that I don't think he's progressive or liberal enough. You know, if that had, instead of hollering, you know, we need to primary him, instead of doing that kind of crap, if we had actually built a movement around the country to leave Barack Obama's name blank in every primary, don't you think his polling people would be shitting kittens with crocheted tails?
They probably would be. And, you know, that's the other problem. We get so caught up in these little moments that we think, well, if we just get this guy and we just get this guy on the ballot and we just do this and we just do that, when really what we are faced with is we have to deal directly with a really painful reality, something really slow and dragging, and there's no glamorous visual that anyone has in their head that can contrast with that. You have to deal
with reality.
With that, yeah, you have to deal with that reality.
And here's another little slice of life reality, David, coming from our buddy Ray. Ray was in Michigan for a while. Now they're wintering in Florida. And he just wrote in and said, people who think that the Republicans can't win should spend a couple of days in Fort Myers, Florida. 75% of the cars in my neighborhood are new or almost new Cadillacs, BMWs, Lexuses, etc. For most of, and this is